My dear Sister Janet, it is 2 in the morning and most of our men are asleep in their dugouts. Yet I could not sleep myself before writing to you of the wonderful events of Christmas Eve. While you and the family sang carols before the fire there in Leeds, I did the same with enemy soldiers here on the battlefields of France. Between us and the Germans is no man's land, bordered on both sides by barbed wire, yet close enough that we sometimes heard their voices. Of course, we hated them when they killed our friends, but other times we joked about them and almost felt we had something in common. And now it seems they felt the same. Just yesterday morning, Christmas Eve, we had our first good freeze. Cold as we were, we welcomed it, because at least the mud froze solid. Everything was tinged white with frost, while a bright sun shone over all. Perfect Christmas weather. During the day, there was little shelling or rifle fire from either side, and as darkness fell on our Christmas Eve, the shooting stopped entirely. Our first complete silence in months. We hoped it might promise a peaceful day, but we didn't count on it. We'd been told the Germans might attack and try to catch us off guard. I went to the dugout to rest, and lying on my cot, I must have drifted asleep. All at once, my friend John was shaking me awake, saying, "Come and see! See what the Germans are doing!" I grabbed my rifle, stumbled out into the trench, and stuck my head cautiously above the sandbags. And so it was. The Germans had placed Christmas trees in front of their trenches, lit by candle or lantern, like beacons of goodwill. And then we heard their voices, raised in song. Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht. I've never heard a lovelier carol, or one more meaningful in that quiet, clear night. It's dark, softened by a first quarter moon. When the song finished, the men in our trenches applauded. Yes, British soldiers applauding Germans. Then one of our own men started singing, and we all joined in. The first Noel, the angels did say. In truth, we sounded not nearly as good as the Germans with their fine harmonies, but they responded with enthusiastic applause. "English, come over," we heard one of them shout. "You no shoot, we no shoot." There in the trenches, we looked at each other in bewilderment. Then one of us shouted jokingly, "You come over here." To our astonishment, we saw two figures rise from the trench, climb over their barbed wire and advance unprotected across no man's land. One of them called, "Send officer to talk." I saw one of our men lift his rifle to the ready, and no doubt others did the same. But our captain called out, "Hold your fire." Then he climbed out and went to meet the Germans halfway. We heard them talking, and a few minutes later, the captain came back with a German cigar in his mouth. "We've agreed there'll be no shooting before midnight tomorrow," he announced. "But sentries are to remain on duty, and the rest of you, stay alert." Across the way, we could make out groups of 2 or 3 men, starting out of trenches and coming towards us. Then, some of us were climbing out too, and in minutes more, there we were in no man's land. Over 100 soldiers and officers of each side, shaking hands with men we'd been trying to kill just hours earlier. Only a couple of our men knew German, but more of the Germans knew English. I asked one of them why that was. "Because many have worked in England," he said. "Before all this, I was a waiter in the Hotel Cecil. Perhaps I waited on your table." "Perhaps you did," I said, laughing. He told me he had a girlfriend in London and that the war had interrupted their plans for marriage. I told him, "Don't worry, we'll have you beat by Easter, then you can come back and marry the girl." He laughed at that. Then he asked if I'd send her a postcard he'd give me later, and I promised I would. Even those who could not converse could still exchange gifts, our cigarettes for their cigars, our tea for their coffee, our corned beef for their sausage. Badges and buttons from uniforms changed owners, and one of our lads walked off with the infamous spiked helmet. I myself traded a jackknife for a leather equipment belt, a fine souvenir to show when I get home. As it grew late, a few more songs were traded around the fire and then all joined in for, I'm not lying to you, Auld Lang Syne. Then we parted with promises to meet again and even some talk of a football match. I was just starting back to the trenches when an older German clutched my arm. "My God," he said, "why cannot we have peace and all go home?" I told him gently, "That you must ask your emperor." He looked at me then searchingly. "Perhaps, my friend, but also we must ask our hearts." And so, dear sister, tell me, has there ever been such a Christmas Eve in all history? And what does it all mean? This impossible befriending of enemies. What if our leaders were to offer well wishes in place of warnings, songs in place of slurs, presents in place of reprisals? Would not all war end at once? All nations say they want peace, yet on this Christmas morning, I wonder if we want it quite enough. Your loving brother, Tom.